Agricultural programming is made possible by Stuart Peterson. For over 20 years, Stuart Peterson has helped farmers manage both marketing opportunities and risks through their analysis, advice, and action. Stuart Peterson's team of experts and strategic consulting approach utilize the latest technology. Stuart Peterson, confidence like never before. More information is available at www.stuart-peterson.com.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report. It's October the 9th, 2007. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. And K-State grain analyst and biofuels economist Mike Wolverton will join us closer to the bottom of the hour to take up the energy markets. In agricultural news, a South Dakota company says whoa to a new ethanol plant. An Illinois satellite imaging company says USDA will lower the size of this year's corn crop. And a dozen U.S. farm groups are urging President Bush to put the nicks on a WTO deal. Dave Dickey will have details of these and other stories shortly. And don't forget that just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Don Day will join us for a complete look at today's agricultural weather forecast. So stay with us, won't you, for this Tuesday edition of WILL AM 580's Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
In Chicago on this Tuesday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. The nearby December wheat at 14.5 cents lower finished at 845.5, and the nearby March contract down 13.5 at 858.5. December corn 342.5 up 2.75. The March futures at 359.5 up 3.25. And the May corn futures at 369.25 up 2.25. December next year, $3.93 a bushel, 2 cents higher. November soybeans gained up 24 cents, or rather 24.75 at 950.25. January futures at 968.75, 26.75 higher, and the March up 24.75 at 980.5. November beans next year, 19.5 cents the gain at 935.75. October bean meal, 263.30, up $8.60. October bean oil at 38.45, up 47. Mercantile exchange numbers, October live cattle, 93.90, 17.5 cents higher. December futures at 96.50, up 25 for the day. October feeder cattle, 60 cents lower at 113.25. November at 113.25, down 65. October lean hogs lost 20 cents today at $57.47 a hundredweight. From the outside markets, November crude oil at $80.28 a barrel. That's $80.28 a barrel. They're up $1.26. The CRB index at 325.94 is currently 255 higher. The dollar at 78.601 is down 0.119, and the Dow at 14,130 is down, rather up, just about 87 points at this hour.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take our daily look at the agricultural markets is Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Another volatile day in Chicago. Are we finally getting used to it, Wayne?
Are we getting used to it? I don't think so, Todd, but we should be. I mean, it's been that kind of year. You never know for sure when you walk in, you read the news, and even the pre-calls don't seem to get as close to what we're going to happen through the day. The trading ranges are just tremendously big, and these funds coming in here are just making this market terribly explosive, Todd.
What did they do today? So we ended up with beans 24 higher in the nearby. The wheat was down 20 cents in Kansas City, off 14 in Chicago, and corn just sort of stayed steady, up 2.75 for the afternoon.
You know, the rumor come out this morning, mid-morning, about the possibility that the government is going to cut the harvested acres in the beans. Some reports 500,000 acres, some 1 million acres, some as high as 2 million acres, which the government has never in any of the past years, 900,000 acres has been the biggest change from the September to October report for either corn or beans in the past, Todd. You know, that there had been talk last week before the FC Stone and Informa numbers come out, that they would think that the government might cut the yield and cut back on the 41 and a half bushel yield, maybe back to a 41 bushel yield. And then, of course, the private estimates all showed a slight increase from that or higher than that. We sort of took that idea away. And we settled down, and then today we come back with maybe the yield will be there, but it doesn't look like the harvested acres will be there, which would, of course, decrease the total production for the year. Now, along with that, though, Todd, they talked about increasing the harvested corn acres by just about the same number they decreased the harvested bean acres by. So rather surprising even that corn was able to stay on the positive side if you were believing the rumors at all.
I have a question about the corn and the numbers that might come out from mm-hmm. USDA. A little bit later in this program, we'll hear about a satellite imaging company here in the state of Illinois that's suggesting the numbers for total yield might be lower than USDA or might need to be lower than what USDA had put out in September. Anecdotally, when you talk to producers, have they discussed very much with you what the dry down those 90-degree days have meant over the last couple of weeks? It seems to me that when I talk to producers, what they're saying is that I was out in the field harvesting a number, and it was at 245, and then I went back into that same number 2 weeks later or a week and a half later or whatever it happened to be. And the dry down was just enormous, and that they lost a huge number of bushels to the heat. Have you heard that at all?
We haven't, Todd, but that doesn't mean that it might not be happening if you've heard that. But we have heard that in some areas in south central Illinois that some of their corn was down as low as 10% or less at times when they did harvest. And that, of course, took 5% of water that could be in there and could be sold out. So you would take about 7% off your yield that way when you shrink it 5%. So, that is a very possibility in some of that. We have been hearing tremendously good corn yields. We've been hearing the so-so bean yields. Most everybody, as far as bean yields of our customers, when it's all said and done, they've got the 40 bushel field, they've got the 60 bushel field, and their average for their whole farm is going to be somewhere in general in the 50 to 57 bushel range. A lot of it lying in the 52 to 53 bushel range for the average for their whole farm.
Hmm. What are you telling producers that they should be doing when they're looking at a price for beans now for the November at 950 and a quarter? How much higher should it go before they start to sell more crop?
Well, we've felt that along these levels, this was a very good place to just let some beans go rather than pay storage on them, Todd, if they want to re-own something via an option or something that way. But we have a lot of trouble telling farmers to put over $9 cash beans in the bin. We also spent some time on the phone with some analysts in Chicago this afternoon after the close, and they're feeling if this number of, three-quarters of a million acres or less is out there in production, and the government would happen to say a 41 bushel yield, that they say there's a dollar plus left in this market. So I guess that wasn't the lines that I was thinking about or even had in mind, but I do know that there are a few people out there now that are talking the possibility of back over $10, to maybe even as high as $10.50 beans with that possibility. Now, that, of course, would take the government lowering the harvested acreage and lowering their production yield per acre.
Did you get a look at the graphs we put in the newsletter over the weekend?
Yes.
What do you think?
I think the newsletter just gets better every week, Todd. And, looking at these things, just some tremendous analysts, good tools for the listeners to use and look at those charts and see what things do sort of equate to backing out.
Yeah, the couple of graphs that I was talking about, of course, and some of our listeners will have seen them, but we went back and took an historical look at how many times corn had been. And I had, I was thinking it was $4, actually, but I had to back that down to $3.75 to get enough over the top of that for trade, mm-hmm. to get at least five over the top. So $3.75 for corn historically since, 72 or 73, I forget what the date was. And about the same date, I think it's 72, for soybeans at $10. And those numbers don't come along very often. The last big one, of course, was 96, and it shot through that dramatically. I think corn was up over $5 at that point. but it gives you some idea of how few times you see numbers like we're putting on the board right now.
Yeah, that's true, Todd. But one thing we do want to remember is the dollar is much weaker now than it was through some of those time periods. So we have to adjust a little bit for the dollar's weakness. But still, we are, even with the dollar's weakness, we're at some tremendously high prices over the average of the last few years. And it is just very shocking. Unfortunately, we need these high prices to pay for our fertilizer, seed, and inputs. But these are some tremendously high prices that we haven't seen in, these kind of prices last this long in our lifetime, Todd.
You know, is there anything producers should or have been doing about the new crop for next year for Dease Corn 08 and November beans?
Yes, we've seen some pricing out there. We see nothing wrong with, pricing a percentage of the crop out there. SX 08 beans are at $9.35. With a normal fall basis, we did a lot of them around $9.50 actually. For a 20% sold out there, nothing wrong with that. The Dease 08 corn, when it was over $4 between our sale here in the New Market office, we sold them at about $4.16 is where our hedges went on. And the wheat, since we put our crop insurance policies on, as farmers are getting some of their wheat planted, we're recommending that they sell at least 50% of their guarantee, as long as we're sitting up in this range. And we're at 660.5 here for new crop wheat. With a 60-cent basis, that's still $6 cash wheat, Todd.
All right. We appreciate you being with us today, Wayne.
Thank you, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities out of New Market, Indiana. Joined us here on the Closing Mark Report on Tuesday afternoons.
Agricultural programs are made possible with support from Cargill, featuring ProPricing Grain Contracts, a marketing program providing a variety of contracts designed to fit a farmer's performance goals and risk tolerance. Information on the web at CargillProPricing.com.
Just after the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, will join us for a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast. Our own Ed Kieser says tonight's forecast across the two-state region calling for, in the far north, increasing cloudiness throughout the evening. Elsewhere, to be clear, lows will range from around 40 in the northwestern parts of Illinois to 52 in the far south. Tomorrow in the north, mostly cloudy. Elsewhere, a mix of clouds, some sunshine. Highs tomorrow from around 50 in the far northwestern Illinois to 74 in the far southern parts of the listening area. Tomorrow, wind speeds about 12 to 24 miles an hour. The upper air low pressure system will likely create some clouds and showers across the northeastern parts of Illinois and Indiana right on through Thursday and Friday. Otherwise, dry weather expected across the two-state region into the weekend. Dave Dickey's here now with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, a South Dakota company says it's delaying its plan to build a 60 million gallon ethanol facility due to tight profit margins and rising construction costs. Glacial Lake's decision is one in a long line of what appears to be signs of change in the ethanol industry. Construction on ethanol plants have also been suspended in recent months in New Mexico, Oregon, Indiana, and Nebraska. And other ethanol plant owners are selling their facilities to larger corporations. For instance, Verisun says it's buying 3 ethanol plants from Dallas-based Alliances Biofuels. Also interested in buying ethanol plants, Archer Daniels Midland and U.S. Biofuels. An Illinois-based satellite imaging company predicts that USDA will lower the size of the corn crop on Friday's crop production report. Landworth Incorporated puts the corn crop at 13.11 billion bushels, below USDA's September projection of 13.31 billion bushels. Landworth says its estimate is based on satellite imagery, soil and weather data, crop growth models, and extensive field checks. The firm believes localized drought conditions and variability in planting dates limited yield potential. A dozen U.S. farm groups have sent a letter to President George Bush asking him to reject a world trade deal that would slash U.S. subsidies to $13 to $16.4 billion a year. The letter was signed by organizations representing soybeans, sugar, barley, corn, cotton, rice, and other agricultural goods. By the slimmest of margins, Costa Rica voters have approved a free trade deal with the U.S. In a referendum, Costa Rican voters approved the U.S. Central American Free Trade Agreement by just over a 3% margin in favor. A study by an Indiana University environmental scientist professor suggests a widely planted variety of genetically engineered corn has the potential to harm aquatic ecosystems. Researcher Todd Royer, an assistant professor in the IU School of Public and Environmental Affairs, says that pollen and other plant parts containing toxins from genetically engineered BT corn are washing into streams near cornfields, reducing growth in caddisflies, an aquatic insect used as a food source by fish. However, Royer emphasizes producers should not be held liable for use of GMOs. He says producers need to use the best technologies possible. And Purdue University veterinary pathologists are investigating the mysterious deaths of 12 cattle at a farm in southern Indiana. Preliminary tissue tests should be back in 1 to 2 days. Other tests will take several weeks. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILL radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, inviting you to visit our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. Well, up next, genes are being stacked higher in the corn plant. We'll get the view from one scientist at the land grants as to the positives and negatives of relying on transgenic technology. Monsanto Company and Dow AgriSciences have agreed to share their transgenic technologies. It means by the end of the decade, U.S. corn farmers will have crops that contain up to 8 different genes for the control of insects and resistance to herbicides. University of Illinois Extension entomologist Mike Gray says that could be a good thing, but is cautious about moving too far too fast.
There are some very significant positives with where we're at with the use of transgenic management of whether it's weeds or insects. And in the future, I'm sure more and more potential benefits with disease management as well.
In Gray's mind, these benefits have blurred the lines between what he and other academics have been touting for decades. Traditional IPM, integrated pest management techniques, and IRM, integrated resistance management.
I mean, if you think about the last 10 years, in 1996, we introduced the first event for European corn borer control. And very small percentage of acres in 96 were devoted to that technology. This year, according to some USDA figures, about 74% of the corn produced this growing season in Illinois was a transgenic hybrid of one type or another. If you look at the European corn borer, whether it's in Minnesota, Wisconsin, Indiana, and or Illinois certainly, we're beginning to see across many of these states a massive suppressive effect on European corn borer populations. We have just recently completed our corn borer survey in Illinois, and some of the numbers that are coming back from counties in Illinois are so low that it's almost shocking to see how few European corn borers are out there across the landscape.
And therein lies the cautionary tale. Too much of a good thing could be very bad. Insects, in particular, says Mike Gray, the entomologist, are very adaptable organisms. As the new genes are deployed in U.S. crops, scientists, life science companies, and the government, EPA, will debate how best to manage the impact those genes will have on plants and diseases and animals and, yes, insects. Gray has spent a whole career believing and preaching integrated pest management techniques and the newer integrated resistance management program. Transgenic crops may be outdating the first, but IRM, resistance management, is only just beginning, and he is certainly not willing to give it up. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
I'm Michael Kuliska, AM 580 News. Pledge early, pledge often, willpledge.org.
I'm Todd Gleason. This is the Closing Market Report. Time now to take our weekly look at the energy markets. This is a new segment we introduced last week. Harry Cooney from GrowMark joined us last week. And this week, Mike Wolverton of K-State, Kansas State University grain analyst and biofuel specialist, joining us today. Hi, thanks for joining us, Mike. We appreciate you taking the time today.
Good to be here, Todd.
Let's start by talking just a little bit about the news headlines that we heard earlier in the program, and I know you've been following this or are quite likely to have. Some of the ethanol plants have been stopped in their tracks at this point. It appears that there are sales from smaller companies to bigger companies, and some consolidation is taking place. Is this all just part of the normal growing pains of a business that's growing, or is there something else afoot?
I think everyone expected some consolidation in the ethanol industry. The squeeze on profit margins is what's causing this to happen now, however.
And what are your expectations for how hard that squeeze will come over the next couple of months?
Well, I've been talking with ethanol plant managers, and a lot of these plants are going to be okay through the end of the year. They've contracted ahead for corn to process into ethanol, and they've contracted to sell their ethanol. And the prices that they contracted for still allow profit. But what they tell me is coming into the year, and they have, when they renegotiate the new contracts, if corn prices are still high, relatively high, and ethanol prices are low, then they're going to be in trouble.
Can you tell me about ethanol prices and how they've changed over the last year?
Ethanol prices dropped considerably since the middle of the summer. Right now, well, today, ethanol price was about $1.55 per gallon, and it's dropped down from, it was around $2 a gallon earlier in the summer. Today, when I calculated the ethanol profit margin, it's about running about a negative 15 cents per gallon. So they're in the red right now.
And how long do most of them think they can run in the red then? I guess you've told us through January, but once they get into January, if ethanol prices don't bounce back, how long might they be able to manage before they would look for some sort of salvation in the form of a sale?
Well, there are two things that are going on right now. Some ethanol plants are reducing their capacity utilization, and that allows them to actually become more efficient in terms of reducing their cost per gallon of ethanol produced, or come down the cost curve. The other thing we're seeing happen is that they're building these new plants slower. They're coming online more slowly. But I've asked what the shutdown point is for an ethanol plant. No one really tells me. But I think they will continue to produce ethanol for as long as they possibly can, but at some point they will shut down.
Are you familiar with contracts on the farmer-owned ethanol plants and possibly the corn contract that they have with some of their producers?
I'm not familiar with the exact contract terms, but I've been discussing this issue. And probably the farmer-owned ethanol plants will run longer than the investor-owned ethanol plants, simply because the farmers are getting two boosts from the ethanol plant. One is they're getting a little bit higher price for their corn, and then they're getting some return on their investment from the ethanol plant. So I think farmer-owned plants will be healthy longer than the ethanol plants that are owned by outside investors.
Any final word before I let you go on the energy markets or ethanol and biofuels?
Well, we're just concerned that this is going to reduce the amount of corn being purchased by ethanol plants and cause corn prices to fall, which will help the ethanol plants, but it won't help corn producers.
We appreciate you being with us.
Glad to be here, Todd.
That's Mike Wolverton. He's with K-State out of Kansas and joins us. He's a grain analyst and biofuel specialist there. We have a new energy segment that airs each and every Tuesday during the Closing Market Report. Time now to take a look at what's been happening in the world of regional news in 2 minutes. We'll come back and talk about the agricultural weather forecast.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. Authorities say recorded phone conversations between Robert Arnett and an acquaintance revealed inconsistent comments he made regarding his wife's death. Yet today, the 38-year-old was formally charged on counts of first-degree murder and concealment of a homicidal death. The body of his wife, Naomi Arnett, was discovered in a shallow grave near Sedora September 30th after a four-month disappearance. Champaign County State's Attorney Julia Reed said today Robert Arnett told somebody on the phone recently that he had found his wife after she had committed suicide and he had taken her to the site the body was found. Reed says that story doesn't corroborate with the statements of witnesses or physical evidence found at the scene.
Arnett remains in the Champaign County Jail on $5 million bond. He'll be back in court October 23rd. Support is growing for Illinois' bid for the cutting-edge coal-powered power plant known as FutureGen. Pennsylvania Governor Ed Rendell says his state is solidly behind Illinois as it competes with Texas. Pennsylvania officials say having the plant in the Midwest could make it easier to replicate the technology in their state. The $1.5 billion project would minimize air pollution by storing emissions underground. Developers are considering sites in Mattoon and Tuscola, as well as two in Texas. A decision is expected by the end of this year. A central Indiana utility is predicting lower gas bills this winter, assuming temperatures don't dip below normal. Citizens Gas says customers in Marion County around Indianapolis should pay an average of $72 for natural gas less than last year. Indiana's other large utilities, Vectren and NIPSCO, plan to announce their winter price forecasts later today. Urbana taxpayers would see a 3.9% increase in their property tax payments next year if city council members follow staff recommendations. Staff have proposed raising the city's tax levy by the maximum 12%, identical to the previous 2 years, but officials say the actual impact on taxpayers would be less than that. Spanish-speaking residents of Champaign-Urbana will get a more frequent source of news starting this week. The publication El Informador is switching from monthly to weekly publication. The News Gazette is now distributing the 8-page Spanish-language paper. It began as a University of Illinois student project. Its editor says El Informador is a rare source of local news for those who can't speak English. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
Hi, this is AM 580 Agricultural Director Dave Dickey. Spend more time harvesting and less time pledging. WillPledge.org.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Hi, Don.
Hello there.
A little cooler today than it has been in recent days.
Yes, a strong cold front has been marching across the Midwest here over the last day and a half or so, and northwest winds aloft pulling in some fallish air. And, of course, the line of showers and thunderstorms at the front now marching well off to the east. And it is going to be a little bit cooler. We have an upper-level trough of low pressure over the northern Great Lakes that actually is going to settle south into the region, and that's going to bring in some cooler air. Temperatures will be very fallish here over the next couple of days, but most of the moisture with the system is going to stay off to our north. Looks like most of it will be up into the Great Lakes, up in New England, not much shower activity here in the Midwest.
When you say fallish, you really do mean pretty cool daytime temperatures?
Definitely, and at night a little bit a little bit cool as well. It's not going to be terribly cold for this time of year, but certainly more than it has been lately, especially when you compare it to the unseasonably warm weather, the record-setting temperatures that we had over the weekend. Temperatures tomorrow will only be upper 50s, and those 50s and low 60s is as good as we can do for the rest of the week, with even a few areas hitting the upper 30s. But right now, we don't see any hard frost or freeze coming yet.
And then if we go to some warmer climes, looks like the folks in parts of Brazil will be pretty hot over the next few days, especially by the time we get to the weekend.
As we get into the weekend, hot, and one thing that is going to be thing that we'll have to watch for is, yes, it's pretty warm there, above normal temperatures, but there is some indication that maybe some cooler weather precipitation could be coming later this week and weekend into early next week. Brazil precipitation, pretty slim, but that could change next week. That's something important that we could watch. And same goes for portions of Argentina as well.
Except that their temperatures won't be nearly so high.
That is right.
Okay, and then other places around the globe we ought to check in on?
Well, Australia, same song and dance. They're still fighting dryness. The precipitation there, very spotty, not adding up to much at all there. Unfortunately, that's going to be something that we're going to be watching for, although if we do not end up with an El Nino this year, and it looks like more like a La Nina, there could be some hope for Australia to get moisture later on. China, they're going to be looking at a fairly active weather pattern, especially in the central, southern, and western areas.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report on Tuesday afternoon. And that is today's report. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 8:49 for our first in-depth look at today's markets. And remember, you can listen to today's futures analysis and weather reports right there on the web. Just go to willag.org. That's W-I-L-L-A-G.org. I'm Todd Gleason.